From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project is underway for a half hour of commentary and analysis and perhaps even some insight into the news media issues of the past week. Good day to you all. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio himself.
Yo, Rex, I'm so pleased to be here.
Thanks
for inviting me.
Well, it's great to have you in the studio, sir.
See if you could get rid of him if you wanted to.
Yeah, right. You're fired. That would be Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and Associated Publications, sir.
Hello, Rex and company.
Wonderful to see you. And here's Kaylin Brown from the College of St. Rose. Professor, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm good. Kaylin, of course, was a distinguished reporter before she went into the classroom, and so she brings her real-life insights into the studio here. How about that?
Reporting is real life, Rex.
Oh, wow. Sure. Boy, let me tell you, there are some days. But we begin today, however, with something that has less to do with reporting and more to do with script reading, and that is the role of an anchor on local television, with all due respect. That is, there's a lot of talk about what has gone on. Now, nationally, there's been attention to something we talked about in this show some months ago, and that is the role of Sinclair, which is, of course, a vast owner of stations across the country. And over the past couple of weeks, there's been a lot going on, a lot of talk that we haven't yet gotten to hear about the requirement, the must-reads on anchors that Sinclair is requiring stations, including the CBS affiliate in Albany, WRGB, requiring them to read statements that have to do with echoing the president's comments about the press and requiring commentary to be carried by their national commentators who themselves have ties to President Trump. So, what do we think about this, folks?
Well, first of all, I should probably say that the wonderful woman who did it here in our region is Liz Bishop, who's been a fixture on Channel 6 for many years. And I should probably disqualify myself from this because, A, I like her a lot, and B, I worked with her for probably more than 15 years or about. And she was the anchor. She's a person of great integrity, and it must have been tough for her to have to sit there and read something that they had distributed.
But this is what they're doing all over the country.
That's right.
Liz is the longest tenured anchor in the capital region. More than 40 years she's been on TV here, and they're taking these anchors with high credibility in all their stations and requiring them to read this statement, right?
That's right, and it reminded me a little bit of your paper, Rex, the Times Union, where the old man Hearst used to have, way before you were there, of course.
Way before our time, generation ago, actually, and that did used to happen. There were columnists. This was true of chains all across the country. People had newspaper chains because they wanted to have a voice, but that is not the tradition of the last 40 years of American journalism.
No, I know, but I remember it. I'm that old, and I do remember.
Well, it's good of you to bring up history like that. Thank you, but what about today?
I do remember his picture and his column above the headline.
William Randolph Hearst Jr. I don't think you remembered from the Times Union. It was long enough ago. I remember it from the San Antonio Light back in 1970. But
Rex, I'm much older than you think.
Well, I have a slightly nuanced.
So in other words, you're just saying, yeah, you did it too. So
no, I have
you.
A slightly
Rex,
nuanced.
Pretty much, yeah.
Back then, they did. It is not a part of American journalism now. It is not part of what is practiced in good
generally
journalism
speaking,
in this country.
Generally speaking.
There's no need for you to get testy, Rex.
Well, you know, there are people who forever, with justification, have been concerned as corporations have increasingly eaten up the newspapers in this country so that fewer number of people own newspapers. Same thing is happening now in broadcast. As Alan points out, there is a history of corporate ownership dictating certain things to its affiliates. In the old days, certainly opinions and must-run columns and the like. So we can argue about whether or not it's good for there to be corporate ownership. I don't object in the main to a corporation saying, this is my newspaper or this is my television station. Here's what I want to have on it. That said, this particular instance is particularly damaging, I believe, because it expounds a point of view that sounds very much like a Pravda state media point of view. And I'm told that these comments by these anchors are being made within the framework of the newscast so that the average and perhaps uneducated viewer might not be able to distinguish what it is that they are watching. And that would separate it from a typical TV or newspaper promotional ad where you might say, watch our channel, we've got the best stuff, without saying, don't listen to the other guys because you can't trust them.
But I wrote, just so I get this right, Sinclair themselves, having been inundated with people who are really ticked off about this, Sinclair has been fighting back.
Well, they're taking a page out of the Trump playbook. They're not going to apologize. And in a New York Times story, the CEO of Sinclair is trying to point out that, you know, we may own an affiliate such as WRGB in this area, which is a network affiliate, and we must run the NBC. What are they, a CBS channel?
They're
six?
CBS.
CBS.
Six.
So they have to run the CBS evening news, and they have to run Colbert, who is certainly not a friend of Trump. So he's saying, well, if they're going to have a must run on those programs, what's wrong with we, Sinclair, telling our newspeople to do must runs on their commentary?
Well, what's interesting about the statements that are being read by these anchors, and there was an excellent mashup of all these statements by Deadspin. Deadspin is something I would recommend our listeners pay attention to.
Well, what is it?
But the statements that were said is the following. The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. Well, if we take that statement at face value, isn't that accurate? It is accurate.
Yes.
But the way it's being framed is what's problematic. So we know that the president is saying this too, and that Sinclair is indeed echoing the president. But another comment. Some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias. So an anchor reads that someone's paying attention to the news, they're watching the news, and they think, well, that makes perfect sense to me. As a viewer, I understand what they're saying. The problem is the irony of stating that is to push a personal bias. They are pushing the bias of the president. And then finally, they say, the anchors, and in the mashup, it was most interestingly accentuated, this is extremely dangerous to our democracy. Indeed, this is all dangerous to our democracy. We should not be manipulated by political parties in the media, and that's what's happening. And Sinclair is following lockstep with the president.
What do you think about this, that one of our readers, William, writes, Sinclair was doing this in order to curry favor with the Trump administration in accreting still more TV stations into their orbit?
Well, it's said that if you want to really hit Sinclair where it hurts, if you don't like these commentaries that they're running, don't have an ad boycott. Don't not watch the programming, but instead write to your congressman and make sure, or try to effect the pending sale of Tribune television properties to Sinclair, which is what, in large part, this is all about. They're trying to curry favor with Trump in part because they want approval of this deal.
It's a $3.9 billion takeover of the Tribune stations. It would enable Sinclair to reach 90% of American markets. That is, 90% of American homes would have a Sinclair station serving them.
No, though, Rex, I'm interested in this because in each of these communities, certainly in the capital region of New York, where we're talking from now, Channel 6, which used to be the leader, is now bringing up the rear in terms of the competition between the three major stations that are here. And one can only assume that the more of this stuff that gets out, the less popular they're going to be.
But if they're no longer the leader, that had nothing to do with Sinclair, did it?
No, I don't know. I think they had dropped behind.
Yeah.
Yes, I think you're quite right.
Right. Sinclair only bought WRGB in 2011. It had previously been owned by the libertarian group, Freedom Communications. So.
And I think, by the way, that station, apropos of nothing, as my dad used to say, was in fact the first television station in America.
It could claim that.
That's
you
great.
Could claim that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I don't oppose, as I said, the notion of a TV network of affiliates promoting themselves. We all do it. I mean, I remember in my market, there was a radio station that used to say, now here's the news from, and they would read their call letters, the news leader. Well, I don't know what that means, but they were promoting themselves as the news leader. My old newspaper, we at one point had a phrase, better than ever.
And
an innocuous statement, but better than ever. That's who says we do.
And then sometimes they say, things like the fastest growing.
Yeah.
Right.
Going from where? Yeah.
But these phrases would be in a neighborhood that was clearly a promotional time. It was not within the half hour evening newscast. And what we've read from polling is that the influence and the trust of local TV news is quite high. And so the average viewer is going to hear a Liz Bishop make these comments and might well be tending to believe them.
Which is why listeners of this program need to share with their friends who might be watching Sinclair that Sinclair is suspect.
Here's actually a listener, Jermaine, wrote to us, between the fake narrative of Fox News and leading the president's thought process and the expansion of Sinclair, it's imperative that people understand and verify the credibility of anything they listen to. There used to be a saying that Fox News listeners knew 10% less than people who don't listen to any news at all. So,
I think that was actually research.
That was a study.
Yes,
that
yes.
was a study.
Absolutely
yeah.
true. That listening to Fox News, they used to say, would make you stupid because people found, this is about a decade ago, that people knew less if they were regular about what was really going on in the world if they were regular viewers of Fox News. So,
well, Alan likes to talk about how old he is. I can tell you how old I am. Every time I hear the phrase Sinclair, I think of a gas station.
Yeah, me too.
With the dinosaur.
The dinosaur, of course.
I feel young. I don't know what you're talking about.
That was their logo. So you had a big dinosaur.
No, but I wanted to go back to Caitlin for one minute, and that was that you mentioned something. You may have misinterpreted what I was saying, and I said, "What's that?" I meant, what's the group that
Deadspin.
Put that?
Yes. You want to know what Deadspin is.
Oh, so Deadspin is an online platform that frequently covers sports, but also does other sorts of journalism, such as investigative journalism.
Yeah, so somebody could go there and go online to see what they're doing.
Right, well, they
Absolutely.
Did you see the montage?
That was, yes, yeah, okay, I did.
Well, that's where it was first posted.
Everybody yeah. played that montage.
Yeah. And that's what brought this yeah. nationally. Right. That's right. Yeah. Everybody was playing it because it was so well executed. It was a great piece of editing tape, because we all, as I said, we talked about Sinclair taking over local markets and requiring the carrying of Boris Epstein on their stations, who's rather idiotic, but he's their commentator.
Well, he's a dangerous guy. He's got a sordid background. Check it out. And the kind of guy who you could have seen inventing this.
But I didn't know how to cover this in the Times Union. I'll tell you, we discussed it in our newsroom. We ought to write about Sinclair, but we don't have a media beat anymore at the Times Union. And there wasn't really a justification for doing it until suddenly it was. Everybody was talking about it. You know, you talked about it here in this station on the morning program.
Yeah.
And
what did you do? So what did you do?
Well, we ended up doing a story about the fact that this was a great controversy. Everybody, every local newspaper.
Without comment, nobody from Channel 6 would comment?
They would not. That's correct. Right.
Which is really problematic, because the day that Liz retires, if she chooses to retire, I hope that she will indeed talk about this. I know that she has contractual restrictions now, but I would welcome Liz Bishop weighing in on this.
I think that's important for people to understand that in most markets, television anchors have non-compete clauses. They can't go to work at another station right away. So if you were to say, I quit, I'm going to talk about what's going on at Sinclair, you would lose your livelihood.
One of the problems with that, Rex, and I know it from watching a certain friend of mine around here, not only if you quit, you don't get brought in under that non-compete clause, but if you get fired, you still can't go somewhere else.
Hmm.
That's amazing.
Well, I would, if you haven't seen it, check out online the contract to which I referred earlier and the onerous nature of it. It's unlike anything I've ever seen.
We welcome your thoughts, by the way, media@wamc.org. And in that regard, we turn to Amy in Del Mar, who said that she was interested in the recent discussion of the role of journalism in advocacy versus reporting, and wants us to talk about this. What is the role of journalism in explaining and defending the constitutionally protected right of a free press when that concept is under continual attack by the constitutionally authorized president of the country? Is that advocacy? Is just reporting his attacks on press freedom fair and balanced journalism? So when you're reporting about the president's attacks on the media, is it the right thing to do to put that in the context of the First Amendment freedoms that seem to be under attack? Or is that biased because you are pointing out how the president seems to disregard that?
Well, you know, Rex, there is no such thing as avoiding the concept of bias. You and I have talked about this 1,000 times. The minute you decide to put a story on the front page, or you use a word that describes an attack on the First Amendment, or you choose a journalism professor and she says, you know, this is not right, this is an attack on the First Amendment, and you put that in the third graph of your story, you basically editorialized, haven't you? Just by choosing her.
I would not call it editorializing at all. This is actually another...
Oh, here we go again.
No, it is making editorial judgments. And actually, one of our listeners makes the same point. I completely agree with Alan. RE editorial decisions showing media bias. See? He's complaining, however, that all the media were covering America expelling Russian diplomats because the former spies were attacked in England. He says, meanwhile, over the weekend, Indian and Israeli government forces murdered protesters in the streets of Kashmir and Gaza. And America not only doesn't retaliate, but in fact blocks a UN investigation. No mainstream coverage at all in the U.S. Seems like picking on Russia is in vogue, but holding allies accountable for atrocities and giving voice to those voices instances is not a priority. So
that happens to be wrong because I read the New York Times. I read the story in the New York Times.
Well, how does our listener know it? Right. He knows it because he read it in the news.
I love that, by the way, Professor. We get that all the time. Somebody says, there's been no coverage of this, and we always say, and you learned about it how?
The late Jerry Nachman used to say, where did you hear that, ham radio?
That's great.
But is that editorial bias? You know, I heard, again, your morning program, the Roundtable here in WAMC. You talked about the expulsion of spies and about the killing, but you didn't talk about the Kashmir situation. So is that editorial bias on your part?
Well, I'm afraid it is, Rex. In other words, I'm afraid you're right that the mere choice, on this we agree, and I think you're coming over to my side, which is that as soon as you decide to do one thing and not another to the exclusion of the other, and our letter writer certainly has that point of view, then you've made an editorial decision, which will influence people.
But that's an editorial decision.
Right.
That's not bias. That's a different matter.
You've expressed this point of view for a while, and I would say, yes, there has to be some judgment, a subjective judgment is made by an editor or a broadcaster as to what is going to lead and how much space it should get, how much time it should get. But those determinations, by and large, are not politically motivated. They're based on what they believe is going to be of much interest and is what is important to its readership and its listenership.
Well, let's go back and look at
it. And excuse me, by the way, if the three of us and the four of us had the same story lineup every day, we might choose different ways to go, but it wouldn't mean any one of us is wrong.
But it would be based on our particular characters.
I would say
and
no.
Character may be a
no
piece
character.
Of it,
who
but
are
not,
we,
no,
who we
no.
are. Okay, let me give you an example. Rex is over there going, no.
To call it bias is really a distortion.
Well,
of
you
facts.
Could call it whatever you want to call it. I don't
call
care
it editorial
what
judgment.
I don't care what
call
you want to call
judgment.
It, but I'm telling you, it makes a difference. Now, Rex, and he runs a very good newspaper, as a matter of policy, put local news on the front, and Trump further back in the paper.
Correct.
Where he belongs.
What'd you say?
Where he belongs.
But that has nothing to do, I dare say, with Trump. That just is the desire to emphasize local news in his newspaper.
No, but the moment you do that, you are basically saying Trump doesn't belong on the front page, right?
But that's not a result of bias.
Right. And every utterance of his does not belong on the front page. So that is an editorial decision, and other news becomes foregrounded, especially at a local newspaper where people are searching for information about their own communities.
Really? Because I think if you did a stratified sample study here and you said, what do you want to know about on the front page? Trump's foibles or a big controversy in the town of Half Moon, what would you think that they would say?
I think the Half Moon residents would be all about Half Moon.
And how about the rest of us?
Well,
no.
But the fact is, everybody, you know, if we just give people on the front page of the Times Union, you're conflating issues here, of course. If you just give people on the front page of the Times Union the same people, the same news that they get from the NBC Nightly News, why would they bother to buy the Times Union?
Exactly.
We're giving people something unique, which is watchdog reporting on local and state issues, and that's why they would pay attention to us. That's an editorial judgment. It's not bias.
I guarantee you that the story, as we speak, that leads the paper, the Times Union, today, on the top of page one, A, is going to be very interesting and people are going to pick it up here locally, and B, to the point we're trying to make, you're not going to see that story on MSNBC tonight
or on any of the other
channels.
But you make a very good point.
Aha! Say that again.
You make a very good point. The Times Union had a wonderful story. I've never really figured out what the lead story is, whether it's to the right or the left or whatever. But it was
on the right and hard copy.
Right side, yeah, on the hard copy. And it was about the fact that the so-called traitors, that's not their word, it's mine, the Democrats who have been voting with the Republicans have agreed to go back and be regular Democrats.
You're talking about in state government.
Yes, and that was a terrific story.
It was a terrific story with a lot of nuance.
I think Ira, though, was probably talking about the CIA.
Well, in this case, but it could have been state government. You're not going to find, you're going to get the best Capitol coverage in the Capitol District newspaper. You're not going to see that on Lester Holt tonight. That's just not something that interests the most of the country.
But you will see it in the New York Times.
Maybe, well inside. Yeah,
there was another point from one of our listeners. I believe it was the first listener we looked at about if journalism should be advocating on behalf of itself, which I think is also all embedded in what we're discussing. And absolutely, I don't think it's advocacy to point out to readers that there's value in journalism and that there's a reason journalism happens the way it does. I think readers benefit and viewers and listeners benefit from hearing an explanatory framework of why journalism does what it does.
Well, and the amount of what people might now call advocacy journalism, I don't think I'd call it that, the amount that's going on now is definitely a byproduct of the president. I mean, you would never see a newspaper certainly call out a president as a liar in past presidencies, but it is so frequent and it's so prevalent that newspapers believe we must say, as in headlines, Trump claims, falsely, and then whatever it is, or listing some of the comments he made about the border that were incorrect. Newspapers have to call that out now. And the fact that it's noticeable is because there's so much of it to
call
out.
And yet, Ira, you better believe that there are people in the red states or even in a blue state, there's always a vocal minority who will say, that's exactly what we mean.
Right.
Absolutely.
When we talk about
I hear from them every single day.
Yes, and that's because they're listening to Fox News and they're listening to Trump.
And they believe that whenever we point out that the president is not telling the truth, they think that that's biased reporting. They believe that
you should just say what he said.
Right. Just say what he said and let people. And journalism's role is to tell the truth. And the truth sometimes requires you to point out when people are not telling the truth. This president does not tell the truth all the time.
So how do you hold non-truth tellers in the media accountable? You know, we've discussed this 1,000 times. There was an attempt to do councils which would censure people who were lying, Fox, for example, or the New York Post or one of those places. So how do you hold them accountable?
Well, one way is to report what he's saying that is incorrect. I mean, this controversy with
not him accountable, the newspaper.
Alan's talking about when journalists are not telling the truth. What do you do about that?
They should be. If they're not telling the truth, then they should be. You're talking about Fox News?
I was.
Yeah, well, you can't get on Fox News to say it on their air, but you can point it out in your own publications. And, I mean, this business with Amazon and the post office, it's so clearly either ignorant or a lie, and it's important to say if he says the post office is losing
Trump,
money,
that is, yeah.
Trump, the post office is losing money because of Amazon, the next sentence has to be, no, that's not true, and here's the facts. There may have been a time when if a president said something like that, you would let it go because the president didn't have a reputation for lying like this one does.
Individuals on television who purport to be newscasters and are reporting false information, I would not characterized as journalists. They are something other than
commentators.
Yeah.
We know the difficulty with commentary on television is that everything is serial. That is, one thing follows another. In a newspaper, when you have commentary, you can skip that page if you don't like it. You can skip over the editorials if you disagree or the columns. But in a newscast, like what we've been talking about, that commentary is embedded in the news, and so you're either watching it or you're not.
Right, and the newspapers typically will label it on the top of the page, opinion. You don't see the word opinion often, if at all, on broadcast.
This is unbelievable, but we've reached the end of our show.
Fast.
This show ought to be longer. Alan, you know, if
an hour. We should do an hour, and everybody knows it's your fault, Rick.
No, you run the format of this thing. What the hell?
Well, you come late. You come late.
We've got all these people in here. We've got too much to say enough time to say.
What can you do? Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Kalen Brown, I'm Rex Smith, and we are grateful to our producer, David Gustina, and to you for listening to us this week on The Media Project.
Interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build, meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people, it's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people, their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained.
Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.